Stop trying to sell. And it's discovery you're seeking to understand. Seek to understand, don't seek to sell. It's not time for selling. It's time for understanding.
There'll be a time for that if you need it.
No doubt.
But not here in the discovery.
Not here. They get there far too quickly.
Welcome to Building Your Sales Engine. I'm your host, Mark McGraw. Hey,
everybody. Welcome back to Building Your Sales Engine. I am your host, Mark McGraw. I am here with my good friend, Josh Pitchford.
Here we are again. Love it. This is always good fun, seeing what we can come up with to talk about. Stuff that we talk about all the time, right?
That's exactly
but
right.
But then all of a sudden, it's like, hey, why don't we put that out there for everybody out there to see what they think and see if it can help some folks out there.
And today's topic is just that. We were talking the other day about something we get asked a lot from clients who want their teams to be better at running a good discovery call. And so what we're going to talk about together today is like why people don't run good discovery calls. Why should you in the first place? And how do we, in some cases, get out of our own way to make sure that we're actually doing a good discovery call? Because, my gosh, it's so important. Josh, a couple things that jump to your mind as far as it should be obvious to everybody. But why should we run a discovery call in the first place?
Well, first thing we need to do, not to use our Sandler reversing technique, is how would you define discovery?
Fair.
Because a lot of people out there, we use that and it's almost become cliche in sales.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to be better, you know, at running discovery calls. Okay. What does that mean to you? And so understanding what are you trying to discover? Let's start there, I believe. And so, I've got a laundry list of things inside of Sandler that we can talk about with discovery calls. But when you're trying to define that for a team, what are some of the things you've heard on a sales call of what people are trying to discover?
Well, I mean, on the at least on my side, what people are should be trying to discover in Sandler language is really three things. It's pain, budget, and the decision-making process. So what issues is the person trying to solve that we, the seller, can help fix with our products and services? What is the investment that's required to make? And are they in the ballpark financially? And are they willing to put the time and effort and energy into it? And then thirdly, what's the decision-making process someone's going to go through in order to actually make a decision, time frames, who else is going to be involved, and a whole slurry of other things? I'm not sure slurry is the right word. Let's say that it is a whole slew even of things over there, although I like slurry now. So this whole thing, these are the qualification steps. And done right, those should be the things that we're trying to discover to figure out whether or not there's a fit between what the buyer wants to buy and what the seller wants to sell.
I agree. And I think my thing that I think that I see with sellers is that they say discovery. I want to go in and do a good discovery meeting. What they're really hoping is, let me go in there and see if they can't discover more about us.
Yeah.
That hope that something sticks, and they fall right into the traditional selling trap.
They get sucked in.
Yeah, and I think it's bad. It's a bad word, because I think that sometimes sellers, like, okay, I'm going to get them to discover that they may have good motivations. I do want to discover things about them, but their comfort zone, they get pulled back into the prospect discovers more about them, their solution, whatever it happens to be, which puts them straight into those traditional selling traps.
One of the things that I get a bit frustrated with is that when I hear someone on our client side of things, they talk about a pitch deck. Oh. And I'm like, I mean, I've had this conversation a couple times with people that, you know, if you call it a pitch deck and yet you want your people to do discovery, those two things are conflicting right there. So we should eliminate the word pitch decks. By the way, there's a time and a place to do a pitch. There's a time and a place to tell someone what you do and how you do it and why you do it and all the above. But we've got to put this thing in the right order. And a lot of salespeople in their sales process have it out of order, where they're pitching before they're discovering.
No doubt. And it's hard for me to say that I don't like a pitch deck when my nickname is Pitch.
It's true.
And I've been Josh in sales Pitchford. For forever. But it's the honest truth, because it's exactly what you're talking about. They get it out of order. They pitch and pray that it sticks, versus the quote-unquote discovery process, which is qualification for us, prioritization. Where should this fit in your list of priorities as a salesperson? I'm always talking about qualification, prioritization. All of a sudden, if things more qualified, I think our mindset, you know, as a seller should be, I need to, and this is something I talk about often. If we're having the right mindset, if we're a Sandler seller, if we have the right mindset, we are starting at no.
Yeah.
Put the dial to no. And then from there, it is your job to discover whether or not this prospect answers the questions correctly, that we can turn it toward yes.
Yeah.
And so I think far too often we fall into that traditional mindset that I've got to go make it a yes because I got a number to hit. I've got a quota to hit. I've got to get this in my pipeline, whatever happens to be. That's truly what we're trying to discover, is the truth and reality of where the prospect is.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you're bringing up, set the dial. By the way, this is especially true in prospecting. Set the dial to, this is not an opportunity, mm-hmm. and see if they can convince you otherwise.
Absolutely.
And that it, you get completely different results when you take that approach. And it certainly is one of a no pressure approach, which is what mm-hmm. we coach and train. And that is that, hey, we're not sure whether we're going to be a fit together in this. You have needs as someone who's looking for our services. We have certain capabilities. We have to make sure that those things align with one another. And if they do, wonderful. If they don't, maybe not as wonderful, but still, we should know that. And a good discovery call will disqualify a certain percentage of the opportunities that come your way. Otherwise, it's not a discovery call.
Right. You're trying to discover whether they qualify.
That's exactly
it. And not trying to make it into something that it's not. Used a word just a minute ago. Stop trying to convince people of things. For far too long, sales has been like, I'm going to try to convince you that my product or service is right. We have to flip the mindset as it's the prospect's job to convince you as the seller that they have enough pain. They're in the ballpark for investment, you know, time, you know, money, risk, all those things we talk about. And is the decision-making process in alignment with what you want to play? It's their job to convince you whether you should qualify and prioritize this opportunity.
And Josh, so many sellers to me, they go into these situations with the best intent that they're going to ask yeah. questions and they're going to do a good discovery. And yet, you know, you and I witnessed something. We watched a recording of me doing a sales call the other day, and we can talk mm-hmm. about that. But we very quickly often run into a situation where it's easy to fall into pitch mode. So let's talk about, what are some of the reasons why sellers, even with their best intentions of doing discovery, why do they fall into pitch when they really should be continuing with discovery?
They get baited. And it's a word I use in training often, that buyers have a certain DNA. They don't know what to say. So they're like, well, what makes you different? Tell me about, you know, the one we were looking at in our business. Tell me about Sandler. You know, that's a bait question into, you know, us going into presentation mode far too early. Most sellers would go for that. You, the crafty Sandler sales veteran here, of course, knew how to navigate that, to understand what they already knew about Sandler, so that we didn't spend the next half hour giving them a Sandler pitch that nobody's interested in. They're really not interested in it because they don't know what any of it means yet, nor were you interested in talking for a half hour straight. But that's what happens. Far too many sellers, they're not ready for that question, even though it comes up in every single sales call. They're not ready for it.
And if you're describing like what you mm-hmm. do in your products and services when somebody yeah. asks you, so tell me about your business and what you guys do, to me, you're having to guess at what they want yeah. to buy and what's important to them. And I think that's unfair to both parties, because you might have what they need, but you're not bringing it up because it's not a mainstream feature or reason why they want to buy.
Absolutely.
And you hit your high levels of what you do, and you may not be getting to the root of what they want to buy. And it's also unfair to the listener, to the buyer, because they have to put up with this big, long description of what you do when they're really only interested in a couple of items off the list. So it's not good for anybody, I think, for us to go too long into the what do you do and how do you do it answer.
Right. And I believe you asked a question a couple of minutes ago and we didn't answer it directly, was why do we fall back into it?
Mm-hmm.
It's lack of preparation. It's, you know, even with seasoned sales veterans, of course, newer folks, they're just not ready for it yet. But even seasoned sales veterans that don't do pre-call planning, right? They've got, like, I got this, I've done this 1,000 times. And they get caught on their heels because something in the middle of the conversation, they just go, well, just tell me about it. And it's easy just to go, well, let me pull out my thing here and tell you all about me, where you got to be ready for that and know that you're ready for them to say, hey, tell me about this. And you got to know what you're going to do in that moment, recognize their question, ask them a question in reverse so that you can better navigate what you're going to say and take everyone's valuable time to make sure it's pointed to what they actually want to learn versus this big, broad, tell me about XYZ product or tell me about Sandler is what we hear. So we hear the same thing. We're just maybe a little bit more prepared for it.
So clearly that's one of the things that sellers can do to do a better discovery is to make sure that we're going into it. We've pre-decided, I love that word.
That is.
We've pre-decided on what it is that we're going to do when we get asked this question, because it's going to come up a whole lot in terms of, well, tell us, you know, you start, tell us what you do, how you do it, all that stuff. I think there's probably more than one reason. Certainly the preparation is one. Another one that I see too, Josh, is, and this I owe David Sandler, the David Sandler for, David Sandler said, the biggest problem with salespeople is that we are too eye-centered. And what he means by that is that we're thinking about us, we're thinking about our product, we're thinking about our solutions and all of the things that we've got going on, and we're not putting the attention on the buyer and what issues they're dealing with. We're talking about what we have to sell as opposed to what they want to buy. Therefore, most salespeople are too eye-centered.
No doubt. I mean, it's comfortable.
It's comfortable.
Our favorite subject is ourselves, because we're humans. You know, our favorite thing is our product or service, because otherwise, you know, at this point, we're more sold than they are. We work for the company. And so we fall into this thing where it's like, oh, let me tell you all about it, versus being, you know, them-centered, that understanding, okay, what would they want to know about? Why does this matter to them? And let's keep in mind, part of the reason this happens is fear. Most sellers are afraid that there's not something there, that they have to just pray that something sticks, versus truly setting the dial to know and shifting a mindset that they're going to have to do something that, you know, what I like to say is we're selling when we're talking about them ourselves.
Yeah.
And I tell clients and groups and workshops and stuff I'm working in front of, stop trying to sell. And it's discovery. You're seeking to understand. Seek to understand, don't seek to sell. It's not time for selling. It's time for understanding.
There'll be a time for that if you need it.
No doubt.
But not here in the discovery.
Not here. They get there far too quickly.
Yeah. And a way to look at it too is that if you think about the letters of the alphabet, we're focused on the I, not the you. The you being, we want to focus the attention on the other person and really drive in there. That's good discovery. And not just the person, but the company, the events that are going around. You mentioned earlier prioritizing things for the seller. I think it also helps us to understand the prioritization of whatever it is the buyer is looking to buy. How important is it for them to buy it? Are they interested and curious, or are they absolutely 10 out of 10 committed? That's part of the qualification process too.
Is it a priority for them? Well, it needs to be a priority for them before that becomes a priority for us. And far too often it's, you know, for most sellers, it becomes much more of a priority because you're concerned about pipeline, hitting your number, hitting your quota, end of quarter, end of year. Well, if it doesn't matter, if it's not a priority to your buyer, it doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a priority if they don't have their good reasons from, you know, all the buying motives you kind of alluded to there, from interest and curiosity to pain in the present. If they don't care enough, nothing in the world's going to make them take action. You can't care more than your prospect is something that we like to say around here.
Absolutely the truth. And, you know, there's a phrase, if you think about it, if you care about something more than someone else does, you become a persecutor.
Oof, that is,
I mean,
it's tough.
I mean, that's so true. If I hired a personal trainer and I'm more committed, or the personal trainer is more committed to my success than I am, that personal trainer becomes a persecutor. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing that happens, I think, when salespeople are more committed to seeing a deal go through for the buyer than the buyer is committed to seeing a deal go through. Mm-hmm. And we end up following up and going into chase mode and all the stuff that, that starts to occur from that. And it really turns into a mess.
It's a good way to put it. It turns into a mess. But the opposite is something that sellers out there that are maybe, you know, you see this where when the script flips, mm-hmm. when you've done a good job of discovery, when a buyer has expressed issues and pain that, that matter to them, and we're moving through this in the correct order, behavior flips. Yeah. And we talk about the buyer
acts differently.
They act totally differently. They all of a sudden are very responsive via mm-hmm. email. They pick up the phone. They're shooting you text back. All those things that sellers see when things are going well happen far more often when we actually do this in order and seek to discover and understand and get the buyer to express what they're looking for. All of a sudden, they're getting to the point where their pain becomes more actionable. This is in the right priorities list of everything else they've got going on. There's, you know, they're knocking down roadblocks to getting this done because this is toward the top of their priority list. It's on the right timeline. All of a sudden, they start acting. You know, good prospects play their lines. They have a tendency to play their lines more when we get this in order. And you know, sellers have seen this before. That all of a sudden, wow. They're answering the phone, all that stuff. It's because we've got it right this time.
And I think as a seller, we need to, in order to get this right, mm-hmm. we need to set the expectations properly with the buyer that we're here for a discovery meeting that's mutual between the two of us. Otherwise, the buyer ends up expecting you to start a presentation and to roll into all the stuff. And that's, you know, that's, it's productive, but it's not the most efficient way. So you kind of have to set the expectation that either A, Mr. or Mrs. Buyer, we're going to spend a little bit of time first talking about what issues you've got going on, and then we're happy to share with you some of the solutions that we have. And we're going to do that in this meeting. We'll call it a discovery meeting. Or, and this is another option, you set the expectation that in this meeting, we're going to talk about predominantly you. And only you. And in the next meeting, we'll come in the second meeting, we'll come in and we'll lay out some possible solutions for you and give you a little bit more. Now, that's another way to go at it. And that works well, too. You just have to make sure that the buyer's on board. Sometimes the buyer wants to have a little bit of stuff from you, too, sure. for it to feel good.
Yeah, you can't set the dial to, you're only going to talk about them.
I've screwed that one up, by the way.
Oh, I've got a sales fail for you if you're open to me telling you in a second. So, you know, you've got to make sure you've got alignment on what the expectations are, right? Upfront contracts in our world is what do they expect? What do you expect? And you also got to make it collaborative. Mm-hmm. You know, I have this thing that I talk about is there's transactional selling. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be a consultative seller. What's above that? But if you do this right, it's collaborative selling. It's no longer an us versus them. It's, hey, we're working together, same side of the table kind of feel to figure this out. And if we're not a good partner to figure this out for you, that's okay. You know, and truly believe that in your heart, not your head.
Yeah.
Not just some crazy sales trainer known as Mark or Josh said that. You got to feel that in your heart, that you're truly trying to do what's best for them, even if it's a no. Because think about how frustrating it is when we try to make something that doesn't fit work. It's frustrating for them. It's frustrating for you. You end up following up. But my sales fail. I'm now in my 10th year as a Sandler trainer, and I'll never forget my first year with Sandler. You know, this is pre-COVID and all this stuff. And I drove across Atlanta. You know, it was probably, you know, out on the west side, kind of that whole, you know, kind of northwest side of Atlanta. I remember exactly where it is. And you know, it was probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So you know what traffic's like by that time. And I'm having to come back up here to the north or whatever. I get over here to this sales call. And, you know, I was first year Sandler. I wasn't good at this yet. I'm still working on it now. But my upfront contract apparently was terrible, because I remember walking into this meeting room and this guy asked me, did you need a cord to plug in to show me your presentation?
Oh, yeah. And you just cringe when it happens.
Oh no. And I still remember the building. I could point to it going down 285. I just remember it. And it's just so awkward that they expect you to do that, because that's what they've been trained up with traditional selling.
100 other sellers have been in there and walked in and gone into pitch mode, and they expect that that's what's going to happen because they've seen it happen 100 times already.
And that's the reason the upfront contract of what's going to happen is so, so important, because otherwise it just gets awkward. And a lot of times that gets us away from discovery, what we should be doing, and you do it just to keep bonding. And you fall into it, and it was a little awkward.
And by the way, you only have to learn so many of those lessons before you start to change your behavior and realize, hey, I need to set this expectation here so that I'm not going to run into that situation where, you know, they're expecting you to drop into to pitch presentation mode.
Absolutely.
By the way, side note on that too, I think the other side of that too is that if there's more than one person in the meeting, you may have a good agreement with the person who's coordinating the meeting that you're going to do, quote, discovery. But if the other people that are joining haven't been shared that as well, they're expecting a presentation on the buyer side of things. And you walk in and you do discovery, and they're left feeling unfulfilled because they expected to learn a bunch of stuff about your company and what you do. And what you did is you asked them a bunch of questions, and they don't feel fulfilled, and they don't feel like you did a good job, because their expectations weren't set correctly.
Right. And it is so important that we have that everyone in the meeting knows those expectations.
Yeah.
Because it's too easy just to go into, let me tell you about myself. And there's also a level of discovery of making sure it's collaborative, not to use that word again. But you could also go too far that you give them nothing.
Yeah.
And it turns into an interrogation, because people feel unfulfilled. They're like, I learned nothing. You know, I don't know anything about you. I don't know if I want a next step, because
you've asked me a lot of great questions, but at the same time, I'm empty in terms of, you know, what you do and how you do it.
And I expressed this to you earlier, and you alluded to it, that sales call of yours that we were debriefing. You did a wonderful job. I hope you do after 20 years. Sorry. You do a pretty wonderful job of this, of, you know, interweaving things about what we do while understanding that prospect and kind of layering on conversationally, not like, let me ask you a bunch of questions, then I'm going to pitch. It was a nice interweaving. It was a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it was. And I would, you know, I would encourage anyone to have that. And it's listen first. You're going to automatically see those opportunities to interweave what you need to about your own product or service in there.
So if a seller wants to get better, or a sales manager mm-hmm. wants to get better at running good discovery with people, clearly, you want to do a good pre-call plan. You want to know going in. You want to pre-decide what you're going to do. You're certainly going to prepare yourself for those pivotal moments that are likely to occur.
The pivotal moments and those questions. What are those questions that could bait you in there?
And they're the kind of things like, you know, what do you do? How do you do it? Tell me about your company. What can you do for me?
Sure.
Those are often the kinds of questions that you get on the front end that are just bait. And I love the description that you had for that, because mm-hmm. it's bait. Think about it. As sellers, we have been trained and trained and trained and trained on our product and our features and all of the tech specs and all the stuff. And then when we get into a situation where somebody asks us about it, we can't wait to tell them. And that's just the natural consequences of what comes out, and that we fall into pitch mode. I don't mean to be critical of marketing departments in general, but I think a little bit of that is a marketing thing, where marketing will often put together the pitch decks, the presentation decks, and what they're putting together is information that is general to the marketplace, because they are not in front of the individual buyer.
Right.
So therefore, the information that's prepared by marketing that usually trains the seller on the product or the product team is usually generic, in the sense that most buyers of this have these three issues. The thing is that when we're an individual seller and we're in front of another human being, we don't have to be general with the market sees these three issues. We can be specific. What issues do you see in front of you that you want to fix? And that's an advantage, I think, that we as sellers can take advantage of in a good way.
But you got to be ready for it.
But you got to be
ready. And that's the behavior side of things, that you got to be ready for
it. It's the planning. It's the mindset that needs to be there. I'm going to focus on you, not on us. And it's in some cases, it's parking the pitch deck so that it doesn't become a crutch to the seller such that they reach for that because they feel pressure.
No doubt. I would almost do a trap. Go in and do a discovery call without something to back you up. You know, be able to speak intelligently about it, but see how it works.
Yeah.
You know, low risk environments. Start working on trapping yourself that, okay, I've got to ask better questions because I have nothing to show. I can talk through it, but I have nothing to show. Trap yourself in that way.
Yeah, I love it. And I think it's a great idea. You know, keep all that stuff, quote, in the bag. Keep it away. Maybe say to yourself, I am not going to open up the PowerPoint for the first 15 minutes of this 30-minute meeting. I'm just not going into it.
Predecide,
set some traps, know what you're going to go do. So
it's amazing when you, the attitude of going in, doing the pre-call plan and thinking about what's your goal for your highest and best outcome? We talk about this in pre-call planning, your highest and best outcome. Well, guess what? It's not always to sell somebody.
Yeah.
Your highest and best outcome can be, I want to truly qualify, discover them, get them talking 70%+ of the time versus me, right? The 70-30 rule.
Especially in a discovery meeting.
No doubt. And really having those goals as in an early discovery meeting in a process of, can I leave there and say I truly understood them versus more than them understanding me.
Yeah.
You know, and flipping that script back there some. And so, you know, you go into the, you know, so that's kind of the attitude. And just to wrap it up, the technique side, being ready for the questions, reversing, upfront contracts, all those little things we talk about inside Sandler that are the tactical things that help you navigate those a lot better and being ready for them.
It's perfect. Perfect. It really is. In Sandler, we refer to the behavior, attitudes, and techniques. Mm-hmm. It really is the behavior. That's the planning. It is the attitude in terms of I'm focused on them, not me.
No
and
doubt.
It's the technique of reversing. And there's probably 10 or 20 more items we could build out around that. But that's a great framework for us to be thinking about running good discovery calls. Awesome.
Awesome. We could talk about this for days, but
we could indeed. So, we'll wrap that up with today's episode and hope you guys got a ton out of that. As always, if there's anything that you need from us or if we can support and help your sales teams or yourself as an individual seller, please reach out. Always happy to be of help to you. And we'll see you on the next episode.